you do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
Welcome to Death by a Thousand Cuts podcast. I'm Rob Higgins, hanging with my bud, Dave Conway.
How you doing?
My other bud, Wayno.
How's it going, Rob?
I'm very good, thank you for asking, Wayne. Dave never asks how I'm doing.
Because I know how you're doing.
And he always assumes, and we know what happens when David assumes things, don't we, Wayno?
Yes.
He makes
an ass of
all of us.
You and me.
You and me, welcome to week, I don't even know what it is now. We've done a whole bunch of them, but if you've been tuning in, thanks for hanging. Right away, I want to get into some stuff, and I know it's not brimming with positivity. It's actually in the other direction. I want to talk about Phil Kessel. I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame.
Yes.
Phil Kessel, 5 years, five coaches.
Wow, I was blown away.
5 years, five coaches for Phil Kessel. I got to admit, going into the season, I thought that Phil Kessel would have a better time in Pittsburgh than he's had in Toronto. And clearly that's not exactly how things have gone.
I would have figured he would have just played well out of spite, just to show everybody in Toronto.
Well, it sounds like he trained. It sounds like, based on what we've heard, that he may have made a Herculean effort in his world to get back to where people expect him to be.
Where do you think that would rank in the Gary Roberts?
Less hot dogs. It'd be less hot dogs and less Call of Duty.
Is Phil Kessel a coach killer? Is Phil Kessel, I'll put it to you this way. Is Phil Kessel the cell-driven battle that results in autoimmune disease that eventually results in self-destruction of the organism?
Yes.
I don't know if it's as much of a coach killer or as it is a team killer.
But
because look what he did. Well, look what happened to...
And I'll ask you this. Now, you actually remind me of something else. How the fuck is Rick Tocchet still employed? You're telling me you're going to fire the coach, but you're not going to even look at the guy that runs the power play. The power play that features what? Kessel, Crosby, Malkin. I mean, we don't need to. It's ridiculous the amount of talent out there. We know how bad the power play's been this year. Clearly, Crosby's not happy. You know, people that watch the team on a daily basis have pointed out that he doesn't appear to be happy. He's frustrated. When plays happen on the ice that he's disappointed in, he expresses it.
Well, and then Phil Kessel's reaction to that is extra sulking.
Well, Phil Kessel, as we know, in Toronto, was famous for coming off the ice and slamming the door shut on the bench, swearing his head off, and clearly, he was frustrated as well. But Pittsburgh fires the coach. Rick Tocchet, guy running the power play, left in place. Just seems a bit odd to me. And then I read some of the beat writer stuff coming out of Pittsburgh. And clearly, I'm not the only one thinking it. There's a whole article breaking down the relationship between Tocchet and Mario. And questioning Burkle and Mario's ownership. So here in Toronto, I can say based on our own experience that when they sorted Toronto's shit at the very top, it somehow magically has created a new template here that has manifested itself physically on the ice before our very eyes. Whether it was bringing in Shanahan, which brought in Babcock, which brought in Lamoriello, which brought in a, as people like to say, a culture change. Some like to say that's an overused term, but literally that's what it is, right? When culture is the result of repeated behavior by enough people. So if you have enough people in Leafland fucking the dog long enough, then that becomes the culture. So the term isn't overused. It's actually quite applicable. And we've seen that culture change right before our very eyes. And that really, if you want to back engineer it, does go back to addressing the ownership at the very top. So I wonder if that Pittsburgh situation isn't similar, where they've got an organizational issue that is a cosmic pain for Sidney Crosby.
So is the solution, well, there's lots of different solutions, but it's not removing Sidney Crosby. Maybe for him personally,
you can deal with it symptomatically all you want, is what I'm saying. I'm saying you can address it.
Well, if you look at it from Sidney's point of view, I mean,
you can fire the coach. You can wish you hadn't signed. I mean, they're going to have to pay Kessel that money for 6 or 7 years. From a hockey perspective, they've top loaded their contracts so ridiculously that, yeah, the power play sucking is sort of the salt in the wound, because that's the one area where you should and have to be killing it when you've given 5 or 6 guys all of your team's money and the rest of the depth just isn't there.
Yeah, especially when the guys at the top that are making all the money are giving out, you know, the energy that's setting the tone for the rest of the team. Anybody that's young coming up, it's a shit show right there.
Yeah, so feel the shame, Phil Kessel. I've got some more shame to direct. And I know we have, in weeks past, dropped the hammer on this player already, Wayne. And I do believe you had him on your roster up until recently. Cut free by Wayno. Feel the shame, Ryan Kessler.
Uh-huh. 2 minutes by yourself and you feel shame.
I looked at his numbers again, Wayno. And I'm sure you're familiar with this line. But, I mean, we're talking about... And I know people didn't expect him to be a dominant regular season force this year. Somebody maybe more geared towards playoff production, given the situation with the Anaheim Ducks. But 11 points in 29 games, 3 lousy goals, and a minus 12 does not an option make.
Not at all.
Minus 12. Oof.
Feel the shame, Kessler. From Kessel to Kessler.
Double that up.
I can't believe we're going to have to talk about this guy again. But Jake the Snake Voracek.
2 minutes by yourself and you feel shame.
I say this recognizing that in his last 5 games he's got, what, 3 points or something. And the Flyers, with the presence of the Ghost, some good goaltending, the continued efforts of Claude Giroux, the Flyers, the reemergence of Wayne Simmonds as an option, among other things, the Flyers have actually won some hockey games. But Jake, monsieur, please, feel this shame.
Wait, save it.
Step aside.
1 goal, 16 points in 30 games. Don't make me go back to the second half of last season and add up the futility. In the context of this season, maybe the second half of this year is where Jake puts up the numbers. Maybe what we're saying here inadvertently is now might be the time to go pluck Voracek. I know the team is trying their best. They've switched him to left wing from right wing, trying to give him a different look. But maybe that's the narrative that gets written here. 2 seasons, same production. Last year it was the first half. This year it'll be the second half. Any likelihood to that, Wayne, or am I just pipe dreaming on behalf of Voracek owners?
No, I think that's how it goes. That's how hockey works. You know, year after year you expect at least a certain gauge from numbers where you
right.
have them.
We get married to these expectations of trajectory, don't we? Don't we? We look at a file and we think, wow, so that's happened in this amount of time. If he gets more looks and more time, just imagine what that number will be.
Yeah.
We sort of get married to that, don't we?
And on the bottom end, you think, well, he's going to hold these numbers at least. And that's why people like me had Kessler up till days ago. And it's because you think it's going to come. It has to come. Eventually, the number's going to go to where it should be.
Well, yeah, water does find its level when it comes to fantasy hockey.
He's still got
usually.
5 years on his contract, though. He's pretty comfortable.
What do you,
Kessler just signed his.
Are you implying that because he got rich, that he's not working as hard?
No, that couldn't possibly be.
What an outrageous assumption.
This should be a topic one day, actually. But
another thought. I know this has nothing to do with fantasy hockey, but NFL has no corporate ownership and revenue sharing to make sure no team is left behind. How is that not applied on a bigger level in the United States? Like, say, to the country?
Well.
Anyways, I know that was a bit of a derailer. I got some more shame to hand out as well. Matt Molson? Like, I don't know if he's noticed, but there's a small party being had in Buffalo. And the guy hosting that party all season has been Ryan O'Reilly, but the party's moved down the hall to Risto Ruustolainen's room in case anybody
the
has
rooster.
It. The rooster's he's throwing all the late nights now, in case you haven't noticed. He's got 17 points in his last 17 games as a defenseman. Something I complained about, I believe, just last week, something I let slip through my fingers and get to our good friend Jason Newhouse, the villain, if you will, the foil in our league. He's
got a tall hat and twirly mustache.
Yeah. He is the worst.
Yeah.
Anyways, Matt Molson, you've got no goals in his last 18 games. Like, there's a small party being had in Buffalo. I don't think he's at any of these parties. Zero goals in 18 games. And you know who else belongs in the same category while we're at it? Pekka Rinne. I think everyone had just assumed that based on what happened last year that $7 million price tag, whatever it is that's attached to him right now, is sort of money well spent because he's Pekka Rinne. But not very Pekka Rinne-esque when you've got a cumulative save percentage on the season of .907.
It's more like Pacadini.
Pacadini. Oh, dear. James Reimer's crushing Pekka Rinne. Now, I know it's a completely different context and the comparison is kind of ridiculous. But, hey, Pekka Rinne, feel the shame.
What about room?
So, I'm wondering next, since he's come back, it's been about 20 games, where does TJ Brody fit? Who are his peers in the HFI numbers?
TJ Brody, right. Okay, returning Calgary defenseman, for those that don't know. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you know who TJ Brody is. Yeah, you're right. He's been back for 20 games. He's got 13 points. I guess the question you're asking is, who are his peers and how does he rank, right, through this filter?
Yeah.
And that is an area where this tool can be helpful because it is a rate-based per-game measure. So when you look at his 20-game sample and compare it to the best defenseman in the NHL this year on a per-game basis, right now it is Carlson and Klingberg still. We've been talking about this all season long. It's been the Klingberg-Carlson show. Lately, Klingberg slowed down just a little bit. He's now right at 30 points in 30 games. Carlson's a little bit better than that, 32 and 30. And they're both rocking 2.1 defenseman HFIs. Anything from a defenseman in the neighborhood of 2.0 is great. That's high end. I mean, PK Subban, Carlson, at their peak have been 2.3, 2.4, which is on par with the top 20, 25 forwards in the NHL. So that's when suddenly your defenseman slot becomes incredibly valuable, obviously. Carlson and Klingberg sort of owning that territory thus far, but there's a new participant when it comes to the pursuit of the best defenseman HFI, and this should not be a surprise, but Justin Falk of the Carolina Hurricanes has now, in 30 games, racked up 93 shots on goal, 12 power play goals, count them. Unless my eyes are deceiving me, and these statistics are inaccurate, Justin Falk has been credited with 12 goals in 30 games, 25 points. He's still a minus, which is a drag on the file. But the guy that's known for the howitzer is just racking it up for the Hurricanes on the blue line, from the blue line. From an HFI perspective, he's usurped Brent Burns, who has been owning that three spot for a while. But Brent's minus 15 is starting to drag him down. San Jose's ability to lose hockey games is dragging him down. But there's your new top three, Carlson, Klingberg, and Falk from an HFI perspective. And Justin Falk deserves the headlines this week.
There you go.
He sure does.
Now, where does TJ Brody fit into all of this? Well, we can keep going down the list and see where he ranks. We've got the ghost, Shane Gostisbehere, from the Philadelphia Flyers. Yep. He's got 9 points in 14 games. He's rocking a 1.8. You got Big Buff, Suter, Yossi, Carlson, Subban, Shattenkirk, all hovering around the 1.7, 1.8, which is still elite for a blue liner. For folks that don't know, for our winning fantasy rosters, we want defensemen that are 1.4 or more. Generally, there's about 20 of them, 25, just like we're looking for 1.7s at the forward position or 2.0s if we're talking truly elite options. From the blue line, we're looking for 1.4s. The elite options here, of course, being anyone that can get to a 2.0, usually reserved for just two or three of them. But as we go down the list, after that group of 1.7, 1.8s, we're talking about a peer group that involves guys like Doughty, Ristolainen, who we talked about earlier. Can't believe he's up there already. But Doughty, Weber, Ristolainen, Keith, Chara, these guys all belong together in terms of a peer group this year. And just below that, we're talking about Krug, Seabrook, Parayko, which has been a great story for St. Louis at times this year, Markov, Ekblad, Ekman-Larsson hanging on to his 1.4 status despite the ridiculous minus 9 that seems to be just growing, the blemish on his file, if you will. But we have to go through and past all of these guys to find the group of players that TJ Brody is hanging out with. And that's what I'm trying to get
near.
And that's what I'm trying to get to, Wayno, this long drawn out response to your very simple question. And it is a group that includes, surprisingly, Alexander Edler, 8 power play points, 6 goals, 17 and 30, not a minus. Jason Demers for the Dallas Stars seems to be a good import for them. Plus 10. He's got 12 points in 24 games. That's essentially a 40-point pace for a blue liner there who doesn't necessarily get the prime looks for the Stars. And right there in that group, what the hell? My computer just went nuts. Look at that. Hey, would you mind getting back to the conversation? Thank you. And after Jason Demers, that's where we find TJ Brody. He's rocking a 1.3. He had a 1.2 last year. He had basically a coming out party, if you will. 41 points, I think, last year as a defenseman for the Calgary Flames, which is certainly worthy of being on your team and your roster. The HFI wasn't quite there. It was on the cusp of being a 1.4. So it didn't put him into the top 20 necessarily in terms of that conversation, but he's just outside of it. And this year what we're seeing is that number is going up. And in only 20 games, it is not a full season. Certainly, you could suggest that 1.3 might come down to a 1.2 by the end of the year. Or you could look at it more optimistically, Wayno, and think the Calgary Flames had such a horrible start to their season. They seem to be finding some level. Maybe this is a file that actually maintains some trajectory, and by the end of this year, we're talking about a bona fide 1.4.
So do you keep him on your bench then?
Dumping a TJ Brody.
Everybody needs four defensemen, at
you
least, right?
Do the eye test on this player and look at the intangible stuff. Is he a reliable player? I think so.
Yeah.
Is he a durable player? Well, he's been injured, but there's no reason to think that he's not durable, not yet.
Right.
Does he have character? I think so. When you saw his return, the team's complete overall sort of look changed, the feel changed. So, and you look at the coach's use of him, he's clearly trusted in the things they say about him, so I think the character's there. And so the intangible conversation is a good one.
And
statistically, it's a good
names.
One, too. That's and he's got initials in his name. Who doesn't like that?
I mean, something to build around.
Who are some of your favorite initials? C. Thomas Howell?
Oh, yeah.
J.K. Rowling? Are you that kind of...
Or what about T.J. Oshie?
Yeah, oh, T.J. Oshie, yeah.
T.J. Hooker?
T.J. Hooker, c'est bon.
Another question for you, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have Larkin. Dylan Larkin.
I do have Dylan Larkin.
At what you do. And someone came to you and offered Mike Hoffman. What would you say?
Oh. Wow. All right. Well, let's look at the numbers. Let's start there. As you know, I drafted Dylan Larkin in our draft. I actually forfeited and traded my first round pick this year and gave up my opportunity to draft Connor McDavid in our draft.
I remember.
In order to obtain Tarasenko. I traded my pick to Jay as part of that package. I don't know if you recall.
Yes.
But I did that because I had Dylan Larkin on my radar as this sort of not really being discussed in Canada player option. It was so much hype attached to McDavid. But if you follow the American program at all, you know how good Larkin has been at the various levels and in different environments. And if you are aware of his belief and attitude about his own place in the game going into this season, you know that he has already envisioned himself as an elite player in the game. That was something I took from him before the season even started, was that he already viewed himself as a player that deserves to be in the conversations that we've been having about guys like Connor McDavid. So that's what fueled my interest in Larkin going into our draft. To me, that was a special file. I did the eye test on it, and he blew me away. Like, playing with the other best junior players, he was dynamic, creative, intelligent, a force. And there was so little conversation about
him. Do you remember what rounds around you got him?
I remember going in, it was Klingberg, Larkin. Those were like my two main targets.
Okay, because...
So I got them early.
Because, like, how to imagine, like, no teenager, no young player walks into that system and
right.
and takes a main spot on the offense.
I call shenanigans on that whole conversation, too. There's this notion here in Toronto that this is going to be a rebuild where these players are mandated to stay in the minors for X amount of years.
Oh, we're back to Toronto?
Yeah, of course, because we're centric. This is the MIAPA conversation that is held by Leaf fans. But, yeah, I think that that's this notion fueled by Detroit that has followed Babcock to Toronto, that players have to remain in the minors for X amount of years, is complete bullshit. The Detroit Red Wings, if a player tells them all the information they need to know and they say, this guy can help us, they're going to play him. And if that happens in Toronto where they identify a player can help them, they're going to bring him up. And in fact, if you listen to some of the conversations they have about this here in the local media, the guys that represent the team are the ones saying, look, our job is to get these guys to the NHL as quickly as possible. To arm them with what they need to participate as soon as possible. So I just want to say, I think this whole notion that Detroit and Toronto are married to that idea is a bit exaggerated. Clearly, Larkin is proof that the player dictates what is going to happen there, not the organization. Your question is, would I rather have Mike Hoffman or Dylan Larkin for the rest of this season, or as a keeper option? What kind of context?
Well, it is a keeper league, but there's no cap, so it's just a...
But it's a keeper league.
It is.
Well, what I like about Hoffman is that he's a shooter, and he buries, man. He's got 15 goals in 26 games already. He does not seem to be having any issues following up what he did in a short time last year this season. He's getting more power play opportunities this year. Last year he did most of his damage at even strength. I think he had 25, I think we talked about this last week actually, he had 26 or something even strength goals last year. So I'm a big fan of Hoffman's game. I think I'm a bigger fan of the player that Dylan Larkin is and the potential attached to that file. So I'd probably be inclined to hold on to a Dylan Larkin in a keeper league. In a one-off, I could understand you if you prioritized goal scoring in your league. I could understand you wanting to to take a chance on that deal and bring in Hoffman just for the goals. But I think Dylan Larkin's a more trustworthy player and a more responsible player and just as gifted offensively. So I think I would stick with Larkin.
Yeah.
That's my feeling on it.
Good.
A couple of players that I wanted to put on our radar this week. Not sure how closely you've been paying attention to what's been going on in Nashville, but finally, as some people would say, Victor Arvidsson has been getting some top six looks.
The aardvark.
The aardvark himself. And he was a fourth round pick in 2014. Small guy, 5'11", 176 pounds. But if you look at what's been going on there lately, he's been getting some minutes and he's been getting some love from the coaching staff. What caught my attention initially were the comments made about how he's been fitting into the top six and how they feel about his contributions, and they've been pretty jazzed on the dude. They've been pretty stoked about what he's been doing. And they say he has a shoot-first mentality. I got to admit, I don't have a lot of experience watching this player play. I can't really tell you much aside from the couple of brief eye tests that I've done. And I can tell you that in the last one, two, three, five games, he's got 3 points, a couple of goals. And for these reasons, he's on my radar. I don't know enough about this player to recommend anybody go out and not add him to your roster necessarily, but
put that X beside his name.
But Victor Arvidsson on my radar. Gregorenko getting some looks on the top line. There's some flux there in Colorado. It's such a weird season. But Gregorenko, sort of a weird file. So much success in the queue. But in their most recent game against St. Louis, it was a 3-1 victory. He saw less than 10 minutes of ice time, but he did get into the scoring mix. Oh, look at this. ESPN's added some convenient ads for Surge watches right on top of the statistics. Do I want to shop now for this watch or continue doing our fucking podcast? I wonder. That's a good way to really have us never use ESPN again. Look at that. I'm closing you. How about you fuck off? Oh my. Wow. Are you for real?
I don't like Pharrell either. He can leave. Pharrell, beat it.
Have we talked about Lindholm Rask yet today? I want to talk about Lindholm Rask, another couple of Carolina Hurricane options. I'm not sure how up to speed you guys are and what's been going on lately with Lindholm, but this was a guy that had some real promise based from a fantasy perspective, based on what he did as a rookie. But he had a terrible start to the season. Terrible. First round pick, fifth overall in 2013. And he had a really crappy start to the year, so I think a lot of people bailed on the file. I know in our league he was cast aside, and I was a bit surprised to see him sitting there, because in his last 10 games or so, he's back to being the point per game player that people expected him to be this season. Maybe point per game is a little optimistic, but I think what he's been doing lately is more in line with what people thought he would be doing. If you go back to the 23rd of November, for example, we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 points in those 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 hockey games. So I'm not sure how many folks have been rushing out to grab Lindholm, but this was something that
Carolina, I think, is so unsavory, though.
I know. This is an unsavory file, but dude, look at the shots on goal he's getting in consecutive games. He had a string of 6, 5, 5. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about your team, but I like to look for shooters, guys that are going to score. And generally, when you see a guy that's possessing the puck that much and getting that being credited with that many shots on goal, that's something that gets my attention.
Absolutely.
Right. And when you couple that with the the skill that this player has, and the fact that he's playing with Rask, who's been one of the better stories in Carolina this year. And I say that with all due respect to Eric Staal, because he's actually put together a pretty decent season. I think the only reason he's not being picked up in our league is because he's so expensive. Oh.
Ching, ching, ching.
But he's a plus player.
Every
I think
two
last
days
I checked,
take a peek and just go, eh, maybe
yeah,
something.
Yeah, two position eligibility, and he's actually been productive. So, but what I like here is the duo that is Lindholm and Rask right now. They're both bona fide options. And Lindholm, actually a point per game one. Another player who deserves some radar love is Jacob Trouba of the Winnipeg Jets. And the reason I say that is because he's obviously a beast. You know, you do the eye test on the Jets, and specifically Trouba, you know, from a hockey perspective, everyone wants a guy like Jacob Trouba on their team. But the nice wrinkle in his file right now is that he's getting some different looks, some looks with Big Buff, actually, on the blue line. So don't sleep on the Trouba file, maybe being a better one than it's been up until this point. And the last guy I wanted to discuss in terms of radar love is the wiry Pageau of the Ottawa Senators. I'm not sure if you guys have been following this at all, but he keeps scoring. I think he's up to 8 goals now in the 30 games he's played. Let me double check the games played total real quick here. Jean-Gabriel Pageau has now dressed for 30 games this year. He's got 8 goals, only 11 points. He's got 4 shorthanded goals. Is it anything to get excited about from a fantasy perspective? Well, if you're in a roto league head-to-head and you're counting shorties, I think he's worthy of your radar. If you do the eye test and watch the Sens, he's kind of exciting to watch. He's got the gift of creativity. Clearly, he's trusted to be thrown out there in defensive situations so often, but he does have a pretty decent shot total, 48 shots on goal. It's not exactly 2 per, but the 16.7 shooting percentage, perhaps unrealistic in terms of a career perspective, but man, Pageau has gotten on my radar.
Yeah,
and the Senators are interesting. They're getting Hammond back. We've got guys like Bobby Ryan exceeding expectations and now getting looks on the top line. So suddenly the depth is actually something that isn't theoretical. It's a little more practical when you got guys like Pageau, Zibanejad, Turris, Stone, Hoffman, Ryan, all as bona fide options up front in terms of production. So anyways, Pageau on my radar. Another one is Marcus Granlund of the Calgary Flames. If you follow the Flames, you know the coaching staff, very happy with what's going on there. And coach's comments obviously have to be taken with a grain of salt, but he's got 3 goals in his last 7 games since his most recent call-up. And he seems to be getting a lot of responsibility, seems to be good in all situations. Doing the eye test, I got to say, he's looked like a player to me, a bona fide NHLer. So maybe don't sleep on the Marcus Granlund file. I'm not promising great results, but certainly worthy of your radar love. And have we talked about Bernier yet?
No, we haven't.
I know this is another fucking Leaf thing, so don't want to dwell on that too much, but the goaltending conversation is always a fluid one, and Jonathan Bernier, if you're not following what has happened locally, he went down to the minors. He had 3 consecutive shutouts and then was just blown out of the water. But the word is that he's going to get another look with the Leafs. He's going to get the call-up if it hasn't happened already. And he's likely going to get back into the net. But there has to be no doubt that he blows this opportunity. He's practically done. This is going to be his audition to get back into the minds of the coaching staff. And if it doesn't go well, he's got to be out of the picture, you would think. So how does it bode for his fantasy optionness? Well, this next little while is going to be the...
Well, he's going to get a start, so you can
he's going to get a start
if you need to.
Yeah, and if he plays well, he's going to get another start. Yeah. And if he runs with it, they're going to keep giving him starts because they've committed to him financially. So they're going to give him the opportunity. But this is make it or break it time for Jonathan Bernier. And for his owners, anybody that has hung on to the final or file and or is looking at the Bernier file as perhaps a goaltending option because they need one. Well,
do you think somebody out there is actually still holding on to him? I would maybe on a one a day, like a day kind of.
Let's thing. Look him up in the Yahoo database right now.
Well, there's always somebody and see who hasn't touched the roster since the first week.
Yeah, these numbers are certainly not infallible. But the ownership attached to him via Yahoo is 23%. Someone still fucking owns Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah, someone doesn't even remember they're in hockey pools.
Yeah, that's true. The discerning fantasy owner is not owning Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah.
And you know what? The Bernier file, let's call it what it is. It's been theory since the beginning. It's been all hype. I understand the potential was there in Los Angeles, and there's been stretches of some good stuff here in Toronto, but it's not like he's done enough to really deserve even having this conversation right now. But because it is a goaltending-related issue that
and he is playing could be relevant, team.
Could be relevant, we're having it.
But it's also because he's playing on a good team on a part-time basis.
Like you're calling the Leafs a good team?
No, I'm calling the Marlies a good team.
Oh, the Marlies. The Marlies
in that context.
Sure, in the context of the AHL, the Marlies are a good team. And yeah, I'm sure that benefited him in his amazing run of three consecutive shutouts.
But when
do I expect it to translate here in the NHL? I don't know. I mean, listen, look, in his defense, this problem appears to be between the ears. The guy has not been mentally tough. He starts games weak. He gives up bad goals. Goals that make you scratch your head like, dude, where is your head at? So I think
he's an overthinker then.
Well, I don't know what he is, but it doesn't appear that he has the fortitude that a guy like Carey Price seems to exhibit, for example.
No, clearly he's on the block. The cutting block, that is.
Chopping block here in Toronto, Jonathan Bernier. Anybody else on your radars? Anybody got your attention this week that you want to talk about?
No. You know, my week was more about butchering and taking away. And
I noticed you did some real change to your team.
Just dropped some dead weight. We talked about it earlier. But I as a Flyer, I took Kadri. Let's, you know, hope he's on a swing.
Let's see if there's any more HFI
can't
stuff.
Can't be any worse
about.
Than Kessler. And he's less money.
Waino, didn't you want to talk about Leon Draisaitl?
I did. I asked you earlier. I just wonder, you know, from what he was last year to what he's giving this year, if you look in your HFI perspective, I asked you, where do you think he falls?
Well, Draisaitl's been an interesting file this year just because of that. I mean, in his 20 games, he's got 26 points. Talking about a 2.5 HFI, that's top 10. That's on par with Ovechkin, Daniel Sedin, who is sort of a ridiculous resurgence this year. On par with Taylor Hall. And Hall, to me, is... Now, don't get me wrong. I like Draisaitl as a player, but from a cold fantasy perspective, do I expect this 2.5 to maintain once Connor McDavid is back in the picture? I don't. I think that McDavid will inherit that number and the responsibilities and looks with Taylor Hall, and together they will be one of the best duos in the NHL, which Draisaitl and Hall are. I mean, on a per-game basis, only Sagan and Ben as a duo have been more productive than Draisaitl and Hall. I just don't think... And that, I mean, that through the HFI perspective, that is a fact. The top five HFIs belong to Patrick Kane, Ben and Sagan, Hall and Draisaitl. Draisaitl because he's only played 20 games, but he's been so productive in that time. And just outside of that group, for full disclosure, Alex Ovechkin, number six at 2.5. Daniel Sedin rocking a high 2.4. Patrice Bergeron also rocking a 2.4, and that's your top eight. Rounding up the top ten, we've got Hoffman, who you were asking about, owning a 2.2. That is superior to the HFI that belongs to Dylan Larkin. He's outside that group of 1.8s. He's hovering around 1.8, 1.7 territory. So the HFI does make a case for flipping the hype of a Dylan Larkin for the underappreciated goal-scoring driven value of a Mike Hoffman. And on a per-game basis, since he's only dressed 26 times, the production is on par with guys like Tarasenko, as we mentioned, behind that group with Bergeron, Sedin, and Ovechkin, but in a peer group with Tarasenko, Marchand. Marchand. Well, Marchand's got 21 points, 14 goals in only 26 games. So, burying at a ridiculous clip. Only 78 shots on goal in those 26. So, I mean, you're talking about three shots per for that file. Burying 14 times, only three of them coming on the power play. But he's been pretty amazing this year. I got to give him credit. The disturber has been more of a finisher. What he's done on a per-game basis in terms of goal scoring is better than Max Pacioretty. Max has got 14, but it's taken him 31 games to get it done. Continuing on down the list from the HFI perspective, Tarasenko, Marchand, Pacioretty, Camilleri.
Still there.
Yeah.
Hanging with the big boys at 2.1, on par with Carter, on par with Kuznetsov, who's still holding on to a point-per-game status. On par with Evgeny Malkin, who's been coming on lately. Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau, Brendan Gallagher, Joe Pavelski, and Nick Backstrom rounding out the group of 2.0s or more. So we've got 20 2.0 HFI options in the NHL as of December 14th, and that's your group. Just outside of that, we're talking about David Krejci, Louis Eriksson, Claude Giroux, Nate MacKinnon, Zach Parise, Henrique, O'Reilly, Ryan O'Reilly, Blake Wheeler, all rocking 1.9s. That's your peer group of 1.9s. Your peer group of 1.8s, we're talking about Palmieri. How many people would have suspected that through the HFI this year, Palmieri would be every bit as good as John Tavares at a 1.8? Not many. Matt Duchene rocking a 1.8. Tommy Plex of the Montreal Canadiens rocking a 1.8. Tyler Toffoli somehow holding on to his 1.8 status. There's your Dylan Larkin, 1.8, on par with Henny Sedin, on par with Alex Steen, on par with Bobby Ryan, who I still can't believe, if I wasn't seeing it with my own eyes, it would be tough to believe that he's doing this. But he's,
because you don't want
to
see it even.
I don't want to see it. Has he finally been picked up in our league? I don't know.
It's a Festivus miracle.
Panarin rocking a 1.8. And here it is. The final pieces to the 1.7 or more puzzle. Mark Stone, Patrick Sharp, David, your boy Patrick Sharp, has managed to get back up to 1.7. Zuccarello, James Neal, Rick Nash. There's your 1.7s. Here's your guys hanging outside of that group of the 1.7s. The 1.6s, the guys that you're picking up and dropping as the season goes along. It's a great surprise to me to see a few of these names in here, and here we go. Kyle Turris, a 1.6, not a big surprise. Henrik Zetterberg, a 1.6, that surprises me. Steven Stamkos, a 1.6, that disappoints me, that destroys me, that hurts me on a day-to-day basis.
We almost made it through the whole episode
without Stamkos.
Stamkos. Where are we going from here? Toronto.
How many people going into the season that follow HFI at all would have suspected that Steven Stamkos and Jason Spezza would be on par through the HFI field? They both have 11 goals. Fucking Steven Stamkos has the exact same goal per game ratio as Jason Spezza. They both have 11 and 30. Stamkos only has two more assists than Jason Spezza.
Oh, Franz Nielsen.
He's got fewer shots on goal than Jason Spezza. How does Steven Stamkos have 74 shots on goal in 30 hockey games? Anybody?
The coaching?
I got nothing.
Anyways, so there's your HFI perspective, your group of 1.7s, the guys hanging out just outside that group. Lee Stempniak has been just as good through the HFI perspective.
Oh, how can anybody just...
Steven Stamkos!
If at the beginning of the year someone said, who do you want, Steven Stamkos or Lee Stempniak?
Well, obviously, that's not even a conversation, but what that is an indictment of the Steven Stamkos file. And as Waino said last week, I guess I should have him in the minors. I guess Steven Stamkos belongs in one of my minor slots.
Shake it up.
And on that bright note, we will wrap up another week of hanging out around a microphone, talking shit about our fantasy hockey teams and the league at large. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Later.
It's been a slice, and hope to have you join us again next week. Peace.